I'm Paul Flam, technology and entrepreneurship reporter for Texas Public Radio. Thanks so much for being here this morning. A couple months ago, I was having a conversation with somebody in the cybersecurity community. I was like, I have to put together a panel. What do you think about jobs, things like that? And he said, well, I've kind of heard that over and over again. What I'd like to hear is, and then this panel came up, and I'd like to hear, and these guys came up. And so I actually didn't have to do a ton of work in the conceptualization of this, but we've been meeting over the last couple weeks to talk about this topic and to really figure out where we wanted to go with it. And we hope that you guys have questions at the end. We'll make some time, 15, 20 minutes at the end, to take your questions on it. But essentially, the question for the panel and for San Antonio is how do we own the cybersecurity space, and how do we create more companies here in San Antonio that are doing that? So, you know, we have the 24th, 25th Air Force, we have NSA Texas, we have top-tier university programs, but the question remains, are we capturing the talent as it leaves those places, and are we incentivizing or engendering a community that captures those companies and encourages those spinoffs? So we're going to get started, but helping me figure this all out is Bob Glykoff, Executive Vice President for Global Technology at InQtel, Congressman Will Hurd, and Joseph Krull with Accenture. So we really appreciate you being here. Let's get started. First question is, you know, the talent pool in San Antonio is insane. We have so much talent at all of these assets we've talked about. How are we going to capture it? I wanted to talk to you first, Congressman Will Hurd, as someone who literally left the intelligence community and went almost directly into cybersecurity and into the private sector. Tell us about that experience and how that went and what you would change if you could, how you would make it better.
Well, I made the transition because I didn't know what my plan B was going to be. I left the CIA in order to run for Congress, and I lost that first election by 700 votes. Glad I don't tell that story anymore. And so I had the opportunity presented to me because friends of mine that were former CIA officers that started a business, they're the hottest growing part of their business was the cybersecurity piece. And I have a degree in computer science, and so ended up helping them. But what we need to be able to do here in San Antonio is to create that ecosystem around 24th, 25th, and NSA Texas. When you have people that are leaving, even some of the guardsmen that are leaving, you have that talent. And we got to have a place to put them. Now, I know Accenture's, y'all are like going to hire like 500 more people here in San Antonio, so that's one place. You have, of course, Rackspace, but you also have great companies like USAA, which is truly a technology company. They're on the cutting edge when it comes to defending digital financial systems. And so how do we make sure that you know, we're seeing startups happen? A lot of the most successful startups here in San Antonio, and I'll take like Route 9B as an example, is because people that came out of that ecosystem here in San Antonio, and they realize, hey, we can create something and send it back into the 24th and 25th Air Force. And the thing that I'm most excited about what's going on in San Antonio right now is the Cyber Proving Ground, which is around the 24th. And this is, you know, the way we create startups is to have people, smart people, solving real problems. And when the 24th Air Force has a problem and they have up to $10 million to purchase a widget to solve that problem, and you get smart people to understand what that problem is, that's how we're going to create that ecosystem. And then you can start having regional offices move here. That is the steps, I think, that we have to go through. But we're having some challenges there. How do you brief a problem that is classified to people that may not have those credentials? This is what's going to prevent, or this is what's getting in the way from the Cyber Proving Ground really, really taking off. But that's how we build that ecosystem. That's how we keep those talented people. Oh, and by the way, UTSA, Texas A&M San Antonio, Incarnate Word, a lot of people are growing those cyber professionals that we might be able to keep here in SA.
Now, that problem of being able to brief companies that maybe don't have the resources, the credentials to do it, maybe isn't a problem for Accenture per se. But, Joe, is there anything you wanted to add to that idea of working with these large federal agencies that have lots of dollars to spend and have problems and need solutions and are increasingly pivoting to the private sector for the solutions, but maybe, you know, what are the obstacles you see and how can we improve on it?
The biggest obstacle that we have today is just people. We just don't have enough. For every position that's open, we struggle. We're all fighting for the same talent. But I think the opportunity there is to determine how do we cooperate to put the right people in those jobs. I've just recently come back from a 2-year assignment to Israel, and that flavors a lot of my impressions of what's going on here in San Antonio. As for those of you that don't know, Israel is known as the startup nation. It's a technology powerhouse. It's the second largest concentration of startups outside of Silicon Valley. It's a multi-billion dollar operation in Israel. It's a small country. In many ways, it represents what we have here in San Antonio. And rather than fighting for talent in Israel, what they do is there's a cooperation between government and private industry to put exactly the right person in the job because it benefits the national interest. I think we can kind of do that here. But what we don't have here is a good bridge between the people, the cyber operators that are working in the military and at NSA Texas and our commercial community here. There's no exchange of information, and I don't think they know the opportunities that they have to stay and work and develop families right here in San Antonio.
You know, there's no shortage of opportunity in the cybersecurity industry. As you were saying, unemployment is relatively zero for all intents and purposes. And, you know, the market continues to grow at double-digit paces. So, I mean, is there any reason why someone who has an idea for a cybersecurity company who is in the military right now but is looking to transition shouldn't start looking at how they become their own bosses? Bob Glykoff with InQtel.
I have the good fortune of having been part of a startup that came out of the Air Force. It was a bunch of guys who had been in the first Iraq War, and they had no idea what they were doing, but they had a great idea. They had great expertise. And through a set of random chance acts, I had been already in the commercial software business. We met through a common friend in an astronomy club. And it was bumpy, but wild and wildly successful. I'm part of BuildSec Foundry. There's Will Garrett, who's one of my co-founders of it. It's founded on the premise that San Antonio, to take itself up to an international standard, has to complement everything it's doing very well now with also being a product center. The ability to prove it can build world-class products as well as having world-class expertise in all the other ways. There are lots of people we meet from the various services here who have a good idea but are struggling to figure out how do I build it, how do I find the right people to buy it, where do I get the money to run the business. Those three things are critical. We have one company with two officers out of the NSA, extremely sharp. They know their tradecraft. They're going to be successful if we can help them get the right money and we can find them customers. And there's a transformation San Antonio needs to go through, like a lot of communities need to go through that Tel Aviv has figured out, Silicon Valley's figured out, New York's figured out, which is the community has to rally around these entrepreneurs, and it has to provide them with the ecosystem to try their stuff out, to help leverage that network to introduce them to other folks. A technique I used at Cisco is that if I could sell a security product to Target stores, I was pretty sure I could then go at the time to Builder Square, to Walmart, to whoever, because they all know each other and they hire from each other. San Antonio, to embrace the product side, is going to have to learn to support these young people coming out, well, they're not all young people, coming out of the services and founding these companies. It's a component we don't have. And then the venture part, which we could rat hole on for a long time, is a really huge component. The numbers that San Antonio thinks of in promoting an industry segment like cybersecurity need to be 100 million plus type of discussions, not 10 million. And that's a transformation for this community.
We've gone a few places already, but I just really wanted to just ask the basic question to you, Bob. Given all of the assets that we have in cybersecurity in San Antonio, is San Antonio creating a commensurate number of spinoffs and companies in this space? And what's that look like?
I don't have the data. I don't know what our number of graduates or what the population of experts is, but I did a little pitch book analysis. It's an analytic tool that a lot of venture capitalists use and banking people. And I just said I want to see all the cybersecurity companies in San Antonio. It gave me 11. Then I went to how many of those were headquartered here, and I got 5. And then I went, how many of them are product-based? 3. One of them was 1998. That's Secure Logix. Then there's one 2002. I can't remember the names of them. I forgot my cheat sheet. But they're 3 out of 11. That's not great. I think we can do much better than that.
I will add that I actually think the capital is here, and we can get that capital. The problem is you don't have serial entrepreneurs solving a problem that will get the return on investment that those investors are looking for. And so how do you create a class of serial entrepreneurs? Because most of the VC money that goes to people is because they've done 2 or 3 other companies before. And as Bob was explaining, if we can create and the existing companies here to help those entrepreneurs tweak their widgets, then that gives them the experience to improve that product. And product, this is what most entrepreneurs in San Antonio don't realize. You know, if you have a product company, you're going to have a 10x valuation, a service maybe 2x. And so that's why you're not seeing some of the capital chasing some of the companies that are already here, because they're not producing a widget.
So, I mean, you're talking about how we're lacking the serial entrepreneur. How do you grow a serial entrepreneur class? I mean, is it just a matter of, we had an opportunity. I guess I think a lot of us thought when Rackspace went through its transition, and a lot of those folks at the top ended up getting a large payoff for when it went private, maybe some of those folks might become that entrepreneurial serial investor. We've got some of those, but that's I think, every community in the country would like to have a lot of people with a lot of money in it giving money to companies.
So it goes back to 24th, 25th, NSA, Texas. But the problem there is selling into the federal government is one of the trickiest things to do. That's where I spend a lot of my time talking about IT procurement. Right? You know, nobody's ever held a parade for IT procurement. But if we change the way the government is able to purchase these things, then we can help that right here in San Antonio. That's why Henry Cuellar and I worked with ensuring that the commander of 24th Air Force has a purchasing authority up to about $10 million sole source. And you know, being able to do things like that to get rid of some of these some of the barriers of selling into the government. But it starts with, if this is going to be good for the 24th Air Force, guess what? It's going to be good for USAA. It's going to be good for university hospital system. It's going to be good for all of these other entities that are right here in San Antonio, and figuring out a way to connect those two guys or two gals in the garage with some of those existing companies that already have that need, and their purchasing timeline is a lot narrower or smaller than what it is for the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about making it more accessible for smaller companies to do the business that big companies are doing with the federal government. So the DoD has gone through a lot of, you know, overhauling of its procurement program already. DHS not quite there is what I've read and heard. So what, I mean, in your mind, what does it look like to have that process that is beneficial to a startup? Like, what does it look like in terms of, is it so much money for research and development? Is it how far do they have to go with the government holding, you know, holding their hand to get to that point where it makes sense?
You already have to have a product that you can sell into the government, period. Don't expect the government to be your R&D, right? Now, you have applied research, and honestly, I think the Department of Homeland Security, the Science and Technology Division, they are doing some really interesting things with applied research right here in San Antonio, and it is around how do you support emergency, you know, first responders and things like that. And yes, should, and we try to make sure that the Science and Technology Division within DHS had the money that they need for that applied research. But ultimately, you need a product that's ready to go that somebody can buy. And you need to have proven that it actually works. And if you're able to do those things, then we can compress the purchasing timeline within the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, that timeline is pretty excessive, I think, for a lot of small companies, like you were saying. So I just wanted to real quickly go back to Joe. As someone who just got back from Israel and saw, you know, the kinds of things, the kinds of possibilities that government could provide to companies, I mean, same question I gave to Bob. What do you think in terms of, given our assets, are we creating? You've seen the startup factory over in some of these Israeli cities. What's it look like there, and how does it compare?
Well, I tend to see things here glass half empty, only because I've been in an environment that's so robust. So it starts with kids in high school there, and the Israeli government tracks the brightest children in schools to start earmarking them for a career in cyber. They're looking for reasoning skills, math skills, interest in computers, and what you do is you start tracking them around the ninth grade. And it used to be in Israel that only the best and brightest became pilots. Now the pilots are second tier. It's cyber, cyber, cyber. So it starts at that young age. And what they do is they nurture the kids. They put them through intramural programs and different things where they're mentored, that by the time they reach the military, they go straight into an advanced cyber track where they start working on real problems. And they do their compulsory service, which is 3 years for men, 2 years for women. And what's happening during their course of their military service, there's an organization that looks for the best and brightest of them. And there's a commercial concern now called Team 8. And Team 8 is run by the former commander of the NSA, 8200 unit in Israel. And they're looking for the best and brightest. And when they're getting ready to finish their military service, they say, do you have an idea? Do you need some help to create a new product? And Team 8 is a foundry to create these new products. But it goes further than that. Then you have investment programs where you match public money with private money, and that's where these serial entrepreneurs come from all over the world to say, what are you tracking? What's interesting? What problems are you solving? And you have rapid company creation. So when I left in March, we were tracking 460 cyber startups from a country with only 9 million citizens. And really, when you think about it, it's 2 million citizens that are contributing to this high-tech community. Well, we're almost at that point, too. Now, certainly not on that scale. But what we have is we've got lots of individual programs that are very promising here in San Antonio. Some fun facts. We're the second largest concentration of cyber professionals in the country after the National Capital Region. We have the largest component of cyber patriot teams at the high schools. We have over 300 high schools that participate in this. We run the national collegiate cyber competition here from San Antonio. Unfortunately, it moved to Orlando for logistics purposes, but we want to bring it back. And we have hundreds, literally hundreds, of small companies that are doing something around cybersecurity. Not the ones you see, but the ones you don't see. And about 4 years ago, the chamber did a survey of how many companies were involved in cyber, and it was astounding how many are there. But they're small, and they're quiet, and they don't come to the level where they become exposed to the public. We do great things at UTSA and some of the other schools here around cyber education. We do phenomenal things with outreach through what Will is doing. But we don't have anything to really put it together. We're missing that secret sauce that we can start tracking early and grow companies And about 5 years ago, we did a volunteer boot camp. Bob was involved. I was involved. Brad Morrison was involved. Will was heavily involved. And we ran a mini MBA program on Saturdays. We ran it four times a year, and no one showed up. And the participation was very, very low. Now, if not everybody wants to get up early on a Saturday morning, but we had something to offer, and we thought if we build it, they would come, and they did not. So it was a bit of a disappointment.
But we did have some companies come out of it. So it had some success. I before coming here today, I was thinking of, do I want to be half full, half empty? And, you know, I think all of us here really care about San Antonio. I know you do. It's a fantastic place, so is Texas. And we want to do better. That thing that we did, the first one had 30, then it went to like 15, then it went to 10, and we had free food and everything. But there was a company that came out of it. Some folks that came out of the AFSR really know their stuff. They became part of our incubator info site. They're on their way. They're fledging. They're doing well. They've had some missteps, but what they've done is they've been able to secure that funding. And then the thing that I think is critical, which is part of my DNA being part of IncuTel, which is a venture capital firm founded 20 years ago on behalf of the U.S. Intelligence Agency. We source tech for the U.S. Intelligence Agency. And the genius of that organization when it was founded by people in D.C. was the U.S. government needs to augment all of the things they have, national labs, FFRDCs, NSF, anything like that, DARPA, with tapping into the power of what happens in the startup community, in the venture community. And one of the things that is part of the venture community is you aren't considered legit unless you succeed first in the commercial market. You can have a federal business, but if it's overweighted to the federal business, venture capitalists tend to kind of go, thank you, I'm going to wait. It's not that they have anything against the federal business, but from a rapid innovation and global competitive point of view, proving yourself in the commercial market first is critical. And for the government, at where I work, we have a view that if you can prove yourself in the commercial market, the government will benefit from the feedback effect in commercial markets of rapid innovation, and that is an effective tool to have in the toolkit. And what I'd like to see us do is, when we have startups, that certainly should be trying to develop relationships with the sources here, the government sources, we have to help them be able to be competitive nationally and globally, so that they can walk into a room and say, 50% of my business is financials or healthcare or whatever, and here are the features that you can leverage that will continue to be driven by commercial markets without us having to constantly give you a custom feature. Because a feature built for the government is delivered a year later than what they typically can get to the commercial market.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I want to add on something that Joe was talking about, the pipeline of people. It has to start, I think, in middle school. And here's the problem. Just like we don't have enough people that have the talents to fill all these jobs, whether it's in the public sector or the private sector, we don't have teachers to teach more people in order to produce the pipeline that we need. And that's why it's important for folks that are in this industry. Can you partner with a middle school? There are programs that introduce coding into algebra class. And so we helped train, I think, about 40 to 50 teachers last spring to introduce coding into algebra class. And so you have a couple of thousand kids this past spring that were exposed to coding for the first time. And these are in areas, some of the poorest areas of the state. But the teacher needs someone they can call and say, hey, can you help me with this thing? And it's basic stuff like if-then loops, okay? And anybody who is doing this professionally would be able to help a 7th or 8th grade teacher when they have a question. You know, so can we get some of the folks that are already out in industry, can you be the mentor for a middle school, and where that teacher, that algebra teacher, can call and say, hey, a kid had this problem. That's how we increase the throughput, expose people at an earlier age. Then when they go to high school, they want to take a computer science class. Then they get involved in Cyber Patriot or FIRST Robotics, and then, you know, we're able to identify some of that talent. But we also need to make sure that when people are out in the private sector, we're getting that talent back into the federal government as well. And my current legislative initiative is a thing called the Cyber Reserves. It starts with we get you some National Science Foundation scholarship money to get a degree in computer science, and then you get to come work in the federal government for the same amount of time that you got money for school. And if you decide to go to the private sector, whatever company you go work for, they're going to loan you back into the federal government for 20 man days or woman days a year. And that creates this cross-pollinization of ideas, that you have people out in industry understanding some of the challenges you have in the federal government. You have someone out in the industry being able to train people for 10, 20 days on whatever the latest technique is to help implement new tools. And that's how because the federal government is never going to be able to compete with the private sector when it comes to salaries. So let's stop trying. But we do have something, the mission and size of networks. And so this is an opportunity, I think, of how you take advantage of both sectors in order to help secure our nation.
Paul, an important part of that, of what was said, is the internships, is exposing people to real-world problems, whether that's a federal internship or commercial internship. So at Accenture last year, we did 50 interns, and we think that was quite a commitment. It exposed them to what we were doing, actual business, both on the federal and the commercial side. We're growing that program. We're going to have more opportunities for internships, because it's great to take theoretical problems and solve them in the university or solve them in the high school. But when you come out and you see in the real world, okay, this company or this organization is trying to fix a problem, let's help them. Let's apply the technologies. Let's apply the process, the procedures. And I think that's where it really puts it all together. And that intern says, I get it. And I want to commit to this, and I want to be a cyber warrior.
Yeah, Bob, go ahead.
I was listening to what the guys are saying, and there's something else I think that we have an opportunity for. Cyber is one of these pervasive technologies. It's in everything. And there are a couple of other technologies that are coming about that it'd be neat if we could just get experts across these different tech groups together. So artificial intelligence is supposed to eat the world. Cyber is struggling to figure out how to really embrace artificial intelligence, because right now the tradecraft for AI is give me lots and lots of data, more data than you've ever seen in your life, and I'll train an AI model to do things that a human can't do that well. Well, in cyber, data is really hard to find. Even in Israel, they've cracked that better than anyone other than China and Russia. They share data between 8200 and IDF and the private sector. We can't do that here because of laws that were put in place for the right reasons, for PII, and now the EU's done it. I think we should have a group here in San Antonio noodling on what kind of innovations could we in San Antonio do around data, maybe through public-private partnerships, to then drive innovations around that intersection between cyber and AI. Maybe digital currencies and the intersection between cyber and AI. I don't know. That's where maybe we go to USAA. But I think the points of intersection can be really interesting as jump-off points for innovation in San Antonio. It isn't being discussed that much because it's hard, but it could be really cool.
When you talk about data, the other thing that we could take advantage of here is the fact that the city and the county and the various municipalities here in San Antonio are supportive of San Antonio becoming Cybersecurity City USA. And so how do you unlock that type of data in order to have entrepreneurs take advantage of it and use it in crafting the algorithms going into artificial intelligence. And ultimately, in the future, and sooner rather than later, cybersecurity is going to be good AI versus bad AI. And the sooner we get on this, the better. And guess what? I would say this is one of the areas. I'm a when it comes to San Antonio, I'm a half full guy, right? But when it comes to where the United States is in artificial intelligence, I'm a half empty guy. I would say we are tied at best with China, and the fact that the Chinese are doubling down on their investment in this space, the fact that you have an authoritarian government that could force this, that they don't have the same privacy concerns that we do, that can force the type of data you need in order to train algorithms. They can do that. And they have an emperor now who's going to be on top of that government for the next 50 years, plus a 25-year plan, right? And so this is where I still believe that our form of government and the fact that you have many different people working together is going to come out on top, but we have to be a little more focused and disciplined in ensuring that we're all working together for that same goal. And it starts with clear roles and responsibilities of the national labs, of the private sector, of local governments, of the intelligence community, to say what is everybody's role when it comes to ensuring that we stay number one in this topic.
Well, I think dynamism is obviously a huge part of our advantage in that way. Not having a 25-year plan is a problem, but not if you can't really plan 25 years out in technology.
So we're lucky if we have a 6-month plan, all right?
It's a good point. So, but I'm wondering, like, there is a way to, as Joe's been illuminating for us in Israel, there is a way to plan a set of resources for people who have, who are the talent, who do have those ideas. I'm just wondering, going off of, it's Unit 8200, right? Unit 8200, explain what that is, explain teammate again, and then just, is that feasible in the United States given the marketplace, given the number of competing interests?
So absolutely. So 8200 is the equivalent of NSA in Israel. It's a real-world mission. They're both offensive and defensive cyber. They've done some incredible things there based on new technologies and process because, frankly, they're under attack every day. The Iranians are all over them from a cyber capability. The Syrian Electronic Army is banging at the door every day. It's real world. And the kids that come out of high school and straight into the military, they sit them at a console and they're dealing with a real threat. It's not a theoretical thing. It's really they're trying to do bad things like turn off the electricity or attack things to bring the country to a halt. That gives you a real interesting sense of mission when you do something like that when you're 18 years old. But 8200... the folks that started the unit now have retired or moved from the military, and they've created Team 8. And Team 8 is a foundry that promotes cybersecurity for the betterment of Israel, not only from a government perspective, but from a commercial perspective. Mm-hmm. And they've done some incredible things. They've created a think tank, which has done some real interesting things. They've created new companies that have really been emerging or disruptive technologies around cyber. But really the secret sauce of Team 8 is this tracking system. Uh-huh. Where they're tracking talent all the way from literally the middle school to retirement.
Is that realistic in the United States?
I think it is realistic. Here's my ask, and I mentioned this at the beginning when we first started this panel. I want to see more cooperation between the cyber operators behind the wall at 24th, 25th in NSA, Texas, and the commercial operators like myself. What I want to see is we have a very robust community on the commercial side through the Information Systems Security Association. We have one of the largest chapters in the country here. We've run Chapter of the Year a couple of times. We meet 4 times a year at Maggiano's out at the Rim. And what I don't see in that community are uniforms. I see a couple of uniforms here over my left shoulder. I want to see a sea of uniforms at that meeting. We have room for them. We'll welcome them with open arms. We're not going to strip them down for classified information, we promise. But what we want to do is open the eyes of the operators that there's a life and there's opportunity here in San Antonio. to stay, to develop companies, to work for existing companies, to grow your families here, and more importantly, that there's work for your spouse if that's what you want to do.
Your question was, is it feasible? So my nephew got 27 offers to play football at D1 schools. People were tracking him when he was in seventh grade. You know, there are people that were writing blogs about his performance at Pee Wee games, right? And so if we can do that there, we can do this. Yeah, Pee Wee Cyber, right? So we should be able to do that. And again, why does this matter here in San Antonio? Because we have people at every level that are committed to solving this problem, right? You have Port San Antonio that is building the resources and the infrastructure in order to allow this mission. You have elected leaders, you know, like Chip Roy and Steve Allison that are committed to this. The city is committed to this. You have the universities that are. So that's why I am a half full guy, is because we just got to make sure we have that strategy to pull it all together.
Well, I love the, and we've taken control now. I love the football analogy, but if we're going to promote cyber, the people who are bringing in have to feel like, why am I chasing this? What are the incentives? If you play football, you're going to have fame and fortune. If you go into cyber in San Antonio, what are you going to get at the end? So I keep coming back to, in addition to everything that's been discussed, we need money. We need venture funds, or tapping into through the networks of people here into venture funds to drive this, so that if somebody's thinking of cyber, they go, there are three different places I could go to a pitch a company with a reasonable chance of it being funded, or at least seed to get it off the ground. So money is needed along with this. And that's been one of, I think we've had, in varying levels, all this stuff here. There hasn't been much money. That, to me, is a big catalyst. I have a thesis that...
I don't know why you keep looking intently at me. There's nothing I can do for you. I work in public radio.
You have a public radio voice. I've lost my train of thought other than just finding that money, finding a community of people who are willing to work their network on behalf of that. And that applies outside of cyber. I'm involved in other things in San Antonio where the same problem exists. And we can't rely on the government to do that for us. We have to build on this to augment all the things we have here.
I appreciate Bob brings us these kinds of not moonshots is the wrong word, but these bigger ideas, $100 million fund. Let's get ahead of the curve on where it's going with AI and all these other things. So I think people like missions, you know, like with the military. That's the reason why people get involved with these things. They like these big ideas. Is there something to be said for, you know, is the city right now putting out that big idea? I mean, it's one thing to say we want to be Cybersecurity City USA, but is the mission there? You're saying everyone's willing to collaborate, but what is the, I guess, what's the idea?
The killer app?
Yeah.
I love use cases to drive a discussion and convert it from passion and enthusiasm to brass tacks. And so, yeah, I think it'd be great if we could, as a community, rally around a couple of those. Data is one of those that I've been thinking about.
Sorry to be your glass half-empty guy again.
It's all right.
Let me just compare. If we don't do it, what's the worst that could happen? Mm-hmm. Look at Atlanta with Georgia Tech. They're doing it right. They're creating companies. They're getting money. They're getting investment. And the city of Atlanta has really embraced what's coming out of Georgia Tech. And some of the startups that are being created by that relationship, and they have far fewer resources than we do here, they are doing incredible things. Look at Cyber Maryland. Now, admittedly, they're at the National Capital Region, but some of their outreach programs and some of the things that they're doing by reaching into schools, by going to companies, by going to the federal government, they're a powerhouse. And if we don't build it, they're going to go to Atlanta and Maryland and Silicon Valley. So we have the opportunity. We've got a lot of the moving parts to make this happen. But I agree with Bob wholeheartedly. What we're lacking is investment money, and we need to figure out how to get that here. And I think the way we get that here is to start talking more and more about the capability and showing what that capability will do and encouraging them to come make a roadshow to San Antonio.
Does the investment money just equal, you know, capturing some of this talent, or is it more than that? Does the city have some work to do on its on other aspects of the community and things like that? I mean, for instance, I mean, Bob, you brought up, I think it was a Circle group earlier, and how we had missed the boat on that group of guys, and well, it got bought out by Cisco.
I think, you know, yeah, you want a full meal deal kind of value prop for people thinking of building their companies here. That was one of the struggles, and I think it left a bad taste in the mouth of the city, was Techstars and Geekdom. They did a really great job.
Explain, just in case some people
Techstars
don't know.
Techstars is a program that brings small companies together and mentors, assigns them, pairs them up with mentors in the area that they're trying to build a tech company, and puts them through a little boot camp, and at the end they pitch, and the ones who win get funded in a small seed fund. 50 grand, I think, was the grub stake for them. And the program was run here for a couple of years. And I know people from Silicon Valley who came out and were mentors, and I thought it was well run, but it wasn't sticky. In fact, some of the companies that I helped advise are now nationally, like there's one called Data Robot, an AI company, very, very good company. They were a bunch of guys and girls who came out of Hartford Insurance in New Jersey, but they came down here to be mentored, did a great job, but then they left. They left for reasons of they didn't feel the community had enough for their young vibe. They worried that if it failed, they would have to leave to find other jobs. And that's one of the problems of chicken and egg of you want to bring people in, but how do you instantaneously create the environment that keeps them here, that makes it sticky? I don't have a good answer for that other than the things that I have seen going on in San Antonio. The city is in a transformational period with the development of various tech sectors downtown, areas like the Pearl, things. All of those things are helping. We just need to keep doing it.
And we need to do a better job of communicating it. Everybody can talk 24, 25th in SA Texas. And then some people can talk the established businesses, Rackspace, USAA, Accenture. Right? I always refer to Accenture as a San Antonio company. I know it's not a San Antonio company, but you got a lot of people here. But then the next, can everybody say InfoSight? Can everybody say Route 9B? What are those next? What are the examples of those companies that have started here because it was people that came, that were here in San Antonio, got some capital from San Antonio? What is that next set of examples? And all of us need to be able to articulate that and say, these are the kinds of things that are already happening, and there is going to, and then what are the next five that are going to take their place? And we do not, look, I have difficulty doing that. And I talk about this issue all the time. So that is where, and again, I always, you know, InfoSight is a perfect example of the role here in San Antonio. Most people don't know that.
I wish we were talking about five companies at once rather than InfoSight. And just, there's another one called Level Effect, two NSA guys doing a great job. And there's another one called Symmetry, but I'm promoting here that's looking...
These are all companies inside of Field Psychiatry.
Yeah, but they're out of Austin, and we happen to have them here because we can do a better job for them than in Austin. I wish we had five companies we could be talking about here, and that's also people from Silicon Valley, if they're looking at San Antonio, they expect to see five because they know four are probably not going to do so well. And if you pin our hopes just on one every time coming out of the oven, that's not working.
Not return business. They're not coming back. I'm wondering, you know, we talked a little bit about the difficulties in trying to get those to work with the government on the widgets they need developed. I'm also interested in taking the widgets that the government has developed and trying to find commercial application for it. Is that something that we should be looking at seriously? I mean, NSA has its own technology transfer program. I talked to them. They were promoting it last year. I talked to them a little bit about it. And there was no one in Texas taking advantage of any of the technology transfer they have. So they, you know, these large federal agencies, maybe 24th, I'm not sure what 24th, 25th does in this arena. They generate this research. They have some ideas, but people, you know, it needs the entrepreneur, it needs the commercial sector to take it to market. Is this something that, you know, people should be paying more attention to, or is it just too difficult?
I think there's a lot of great stuff there. DHS has had a great program for years. DIA has a great program. There are really good projects going on here. There are people who were doing things here out of NSA that were premier. They were exemplars of things that they couldn't ever figure out in Maryland. These people have come out. They've struggled with, do I do services? Do I do a company? And they tend to go toward the services because they struggle with the funding, and they can more quickly generate revenue to pay the bills, raise the kids, that kind of stuff. But I see great stuff coming out from here. There is an opportunity to do more around things like the AI side of things, where we can double down on the...
What does that mean to do more? It just means to...
For better or worse, I think that the agencies are not as sharp on the AI side as they are on classic cyber techniques, and they're very effective. But to scale out and deal with the man-machine interface as threats become so voluminous and so widespread, you have to automate, and AI is a part of that. And Tradecraft has been slower in parts of the government that I've worked with to fully embrace that for good reasons. Commercial side has been moving quicker on that, but as I said earlier, in the U.S., we're not as good, for instance, as Israel at getting AI into cyber. I'm not following a coherent train of thought anymore, but...
Joe, did you have thoughts on
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I'm going to turn over to Joe, just that there is good stuff there. I see it all the time.
There were a number of programs that were launched years ago to have public-private partnerships with the Air Force, with NSA. I'd like to say that those are robust, but they're really not. They have different programs where you can submit paperwork and be involved in the process, but it really is a one-way street. I've not had experience with it in a number of years, but I've worked with small companies here in town that had these relationships, and you pretty much had to go begging, like, what are you interested in? It was not giving requirements from the government to private industry. So I'm not sure how effective that could be.
And I think that goes back to the procurement issues and writing those RFPs and trying to figure out what the needs are when you don't know what exactly the problem is.
One other observation, and a little bit on a tangent here, but everyone thinks that because someone is a cyber operator at the 24th, or 25th, or at NSA, they immediately can be of value to the commercial side. That's not usually the case, and let me explain why. They tend to be very specialized, like I do one thing and I do it really well. Like I'm an intrusion detection expert. Well, when you come to the commercial side, unless you're working for a really large organization, we're not looking for someone that does one thing. We're looking for cyber generalists. So what we have to do is we have to retrain when they come from the military or from a government job and say, okay, you may be the world's expert in this particular platform, but we want to show you a bigger picture, and you use that expertise, but you're going to need to learn about policies and procedures, and you're going to have to learn about how we process data, and you're going to need to learn about privacy. So really the training begins when you leave the military, and I wanted to just make that point that you just don't go from wearing a uniform to getting a high six-figure job overnight. It still requires some work.
I have similar experience for some, but there have been a number of pretty sharp people come out who are trying to see the full spectrum of things they need to do. But it has highlighted for me that in many instances, if we could pair them up with a really sharp product manager who has marketing experience in a company, prior experience, whether it's big or small, that business acumen to tie with all their subject matter expertise, there'd be a greater chance of success and a higher number of these happening. People come out and they have no idea how to do a company. That's why we did the boot camp, but we didn't figure it out.
How does that differ from what you do over at BuildSec right now?
That's really what we are trying to do at BuildSec.
So it's just doing more, more, more?
It's more.
And do they know? Do people come to you and they have these ideas? Or is it like you guys have to go out and look for them? How do we get more of those conversations?
We do much, much better. We have three founders. We each have day jobs. And we have not been able to fully invest in it. But Will's just hired somebody to help on his side. So we're slowly building momentum. We have to get the word out more. If anybody knows of some people thinking about doing a company, please introduce them to Will Garrett or myself.
Will, do you want to raise your hand?
Try to promote them and get them in place. We have space downtown.
I'm going to throw something else out there as we come to a close.
We've been talking about cybersecurity, but biomedical sciences is another area where innovation in San Antonio is uniquely positioned. And, you know, as a city, our evolution from being a tourist destination to a biomedical hub, and there have been a number of startups in that industry that have come out, and in one area that I think is lacking and we have a unique opportunity to take advantage of is data visualization within the medical field. With the number of large research hospitals, with BAMC, with the technologists that we have here, this is another opportunity where we are focused a lot on cybersecurity, but there are some examples of startups in this space that have been incredibly successful that we can leverage that success into the cyber world as well.
So final thoughts before we take some questions? Anybody? I know that you, $100 million, give it to me. I want it. And then we'll come up with something later. You want to track children. That's fine. That's your thing. And you're about making it easier for the businesses to work with government. So is any other things you wanted to mention before we take some questions?
Internships. I bet every company that's represented here has a cyber problem or a security issue. Try an internship. You know, it's a low risk, low investment, but you may just change a life or two, and I think that's the solution.
Eating our own cooking. Companies that are willing to try prototype products and give feedback and help that company build something you would really use.
If you know what an if-then loop is, make sure you pair it with a middle school to help train teachers.
Well, is there any questions before we let these guys go? I want to take full advantage of them while I have them. Yeah, go ahead, and if you guys just want to repeat the question for whoever.
Do you have one microphone out there?
We have one over here. You can come over, or you can just shout it out, and we'll repeat it back.
I am the Cyber Patriot.
So the question is, how do we continue the pipeline past the Cyber Patriot competition?
Take them on a field trip. Take them someplace where they can see people that are doing security. One of the larger companies here in town, if you can get through the clearance process, get them out to one of the bases and let them see what they're doing as a component of what they could be doing.
A question for you. What kind of scholarship programs do we have at the local universities to draw these kids in and make their educations as straightforward as possible, up to full ride for the best kids?
I'm relatively new doing this, but from what I've looked around, I'm seeing that there are some opportunities. Like my son, he helps me. He's a former team captain for Cyber Patriots, so I'll let him answer that.
So San Antonio is very involved. The 4 years that I competed, every university that is here in San Antonio offered some sort of scholarship. Mm-hmm. For first place, third, third. I remember Sam Houston got like $15,000 to Incarnate Word 1 year. My last year of competing, my team made second, and we each got like a $5,000 scholarship from Walmart. So, I mean, there are plenty of scholarship opportunities, and there are also individual opportunities that schools will outreach to the students in the Cyber Patriot program.
But it's not necessarily
a whole lot. Yeah, I'm trying to build on what Joe is saying. I mean, it's good to see that. Again, anything is good, but it would be neat if this community would really say, we're CyberUSA, damn it, and when we see really good students, we're going to promote them and build out a cadre here, and we're not going to make them have to figure it out. We'll give them the ride so that when they get out, we've also instilled them a sense of service and giving back to the community. We have a thing in this little incubator that when we fledge a company out, they have to contribute back in promoting the next wave of people who come through the incubator. We have to keep the feedback loop going.
National Science Foundation does a scholarship for service program, and it's a good program. Usually it's focused around degrees tangential to cybersecurity. But the problem there is they've only produced 3,300 scholars in 10 years. We need them to do 15,000 next year. And that's one area, and I believe UTSA is a participant in the is a new participant in the scholarship for service.
So what I like also about what you just said, you started doing numbers. If we were committed to do this, let's say we got the various authorities to come together, I'd like us to set a bogey and say, we are going to graduate X number in 4 years and through this program, and we have to meet it. And if we don't, we reevaluate what are we doing wrong.
I think a lot of times students are not aware of the opportunity. Not all the service work with Harmony Fans, you know, there are plenty of scholarships out there for students who want to pursue cybersecurity kind of degrees, but students don't seem to be aware where to find these resources and apply to it, so they kind of gear towards the more available one. So the follow-up question would be is, you know, maybe potentially the city create a centralized database where the students can go there and look at all various opportunities that are available to them to be able to fund some of these courses or a lot of these other opportunities. Because I think awareness is probably the biggest challenge for a lot of these students. You know, they're young, sometimes unless they're familiar or that somebody already in the know, they don't know where to go for it.
Can you tell that young lady what those programs are that you think people don't know? And then you can have and promote that within the Cyber Patriot program, and we make sure that when it goes to Orlando, people know about it.
Strategically, thinking about it, what about magnet school, like Health Careers High School, Business Careers High School, something that's a feeder into apprenticeships and other academic programs? And then my other question is kind of looking in the short term, tactically, what do you see as the low-hanging fruit? A lot of the things we're talking about are strategic issues and having plans. Is there something out there that we should be doing quickly and could do?
So $100 million right now is not strategic? Sorry, Bob.
Oh, boy. I think that some of the things you could do very quickly is we could promote some pro bono type of weekend programs, again, to say anybody who's been thinking about starting a company in cyber or wanting to get involved, come to an event this weekend where we will have speakers and experts talking about how to do founding a company, becoming a cyber expert, getting scholarships if you've been thinking of going to college or two-year programs or whatever it is. We lay out something and we start promoting what we already have and start, you know, to the degree we can figure it out, collecting information and creating a resource and allow maybe the community to crowdsource its way through some of this near term.
And then I think this will be our last question. So, yes, sir, you in the back.
Hi, my name is Charles.
So I think you've tapped into a really great point that I wasn't aware of. I think we need to dig into it and understand that better and get data that shows we make claims in this town. We're CyberUSA. Well, let's get some data behind how many job openings are there on average per month and what are the qualification levels. And let's start breaking the problem down and in having a more informed sense of what do we really got here. That's my first reaction to your point. It's a good data point for me. Startups are less picky than large companies that tend to be conservative and wanting to generate revenue right away. That's one thought that I have.
There are 15,000 jobs unfilled in the IT space within the federal government. Unfortunately, I can't tell you what each one is. Is it a data scientist? Is it a network engineer? Is it a systems analyst? And this is something that we are forcing the Office of Personnel Management to have agreed upon job descriptions for all the various positions you may have in IT group, and make sure we know, have a count for each one of those. And then we can figure out what are the requirements that you need or what are the skill set that you need in order to fill that position, so that if we are giving federal dollars to go get a degree, if you can fill this position with a 2-year degree, or if you can fill the position with a 9-week course, then we should be connecting people with those types of jobs. That's where we are in the federal government, and we should be able to come up with this data here in San Antonio locally.
I'd like to piggyback on that answer as well. I'm Chris Gunderson. I work at 24th Air Force as Tony Thomas and Brett Fowler here. So just to answer this question and kind of the theme here on getting started in cyber, I'm the deputy director for cyber operations at 24th Air Force. I'm also a reservist, and that is one way individuals can onboard into this career field. We'll take people right out of high school. We'll send them off to training. They can still have a civilian job. They can still participate in an area that requires security clearances. And we need as one of the hurdles on getting into this type of career field, especially when we deal with, you know, on the IT side, it's a very benevolent world in this domain. And cybersecurity is not so much a benevolent world. So you need certain security clearances to even get involved in this. And the Air Force Reserves, is the title of this, is Military Marketplace. There is certainly an onboarding process and a value to people who want to get involved in this. You go through the military, go through the reserves, have an opportunity to do that, and still be able to be an entrepreneur and be a serial entrepreneur doing some startups for these companies that want to establish themselves here today.
Thanks for being here.
All right, I think that's it for everyone. Please thank our panel of conversationalists, Joe Kroll with Accenture, Congressman Will Hurd, and Bob Blykoff with InQtel. I'm Paul Flapp. Thanks so much for joining us today, and you know, have a good day.